I don't know if you ever noticed, but I usually have 3 or 4 pages. This is what I have today. I ran across something that really encouraged me in God's Word, and then the little rescheduling this morning and speaking with Jens, it seems as though there's no accidents and things fit together. Even if I'm up here to make a fool out of myself, that fits into God's plan, and we glorify Him in it. Genesis, in chapter 4, read some verses there. Genesis chapter 4. We're going to read. First 7 verses. Genesis chapter 4, and verse 1. And Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of the flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth?
Thank you, brother.
And why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. Last verse is a little difficult, but with a little bit of explanation, I think it becomes clear. It says, and if thou doest well, meaning have not sinned and are walking with the Lord, and if thou doest not well, sin, or the sin offering, the offering for sin, lieth at the door, meaning the sheep gate, the door of his pen, where his animals were, the sin offering lies there, waiting for him to make atonement if he does not well. I think that's the understanding of what goes on, verse 7, if thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted, and if thou doest not well, the sin offering lieth at the door of the pen of your animals. And unto thee shall be his desire. He's talking about the firstborn versus the secondborn. The firstborn having all the rights, and he was the firstborn. So the Lord here is encouraging Cain that there is a place for you for as being the firstborn. And all of those rights are for you. It's a form of encouragement, I believe, the Lord's given to Cain in the midst of his trouble that he's having in his mind. And he says, unto thee shall be his desire, speaking of his brother. And thou shalt rule over him. His brother was a secondborn. He's going to desire your position. You'll be over him. The Lord is encouraging Cain here to get right with him, to walk with him. I believe that's what's going on here. Gracious and kind and merciful is the Lord, even in time of trouble. And here we see the Lord encouraging Cain in that time, offering him a word of kindness and a word of encouragement. I wanted to look at two things, two words that stuck out in this portion to me. In verse 3, the first one, the second one. The first one is, "And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord." Verse 4, "And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of the flock and of the fat thereof." The two words, firstlings and fat. There's a few things in these first seven verses that confuse us a lot of times. Two things that come to mind is why was one offering accepted and the other not? Why did the Lord have respect unto one offering and not respect unto the other? It bothers us. We don't get any explanation here, or very little explanation here. Even in Hebrews, it simply says one offering was accepted and the other wasn't. Still, no explanation. I believe it's in Hebrews. The second thing that bothers me, and upon thinking about it, it should pique our interest, is this is Genesis 4. This is well before any of the law was given. And one could say, well, you know, well, Cain brought of a blood offering. Well, wait a minute. The law doesn't come in for many hundreds of years after this. And what could give him the idea that the blood offering was necessary? You could make a case for it, I think, as Adam knew that he sinned, and the Lord covered him, slew an animal, and covered him with the skins. You may say, well, the Lord, Adam knew that. That's conjecture now. And you could say, well, he passed that information on to his children. Again, that's conjecture. But maybe I could suggest something else. Is conscience alone? Is conscience of Cain and conscience of Abel alone maybe are to account for why God accepted one and not the other? The firstlings, it was mentioned of what Abel brought, and the fat, which is what Abel brought. But Cain brought, notice it says in verse 3, in the process of time. Somewhere along the line, in that harvest of the stuff that came out of the ground, somewhere in the process of time, he brought some of that fruit of the ground as an offering unto the Lord. And then Abel also brought, in verse 4, of the firstlings, the very firstlings, the firstborn of the flock, and the fat thereof. What is the firstlings and the fat speak of? And this is where it caught my attention, because I've recently been studying in Leviticus the offerings and the feasts of Jehovah in chapter 23, the offerings in the first seven chapters. The first thing is the fat. What's significant about the fat? Why does God want the fat? Let's look at Leviticus 3. Leviticus 3 and 1 through 5, if you care to turn there. 1 through 5. Leviticus 3. Now, this is the peace offering in Leviticus 3. The peace offering is the only offering where all get a portion. The offerer who brings the offering gets a portion of that animal. God gets a portion of that animal. The priest gets a portion of that animal. They all have a portion, and they have a meal together. It speaks about the peace that has been made between man and God. We all can sit down and have fellowship one with another. That's the peace offering. God's portion is the fat. If you look up in the Greek, the fat in all these offerings means in the, not the Greek, because this is the Old Testament, the Hebrew, it means the choicest part of the offering, the best part of the offering. And the translators decided to say, that's fat. Someday, along the way in time, people thought fat was a good thing. Today, it gets a really bad rap. But they thought, the translators thought, it was the best part. And you, maybe you can think about it. Back in the days before we had supermarkets, the guy and the woman who had a little bit of pudge on them was doing pretty well. Everybody can have a lot of pudge these days, but back then, it was the best part. It was the part to be desired. And the Lord gets that part. Moreover, the fat, if you were to bring an animal, think of the fatted calf, the prodigal son. He brought the fatted calf, the best one. That fatted calf was probably reserved for the Lord at some point, but it went when the son came back. But the fatted animal represents, if you will, a continuous walk with the Lord that is consistent day after day after day. What do you need to do to get a fatted animal? A fatted animal doesn't eat once, overeat once and get fat. It needs to overeat every day for a long time to get fat. It represents that person's commitment to the Lord to bring a fatted animal as an offering. And so it is with us. We bring the fatted animal. Our walk with the Lord isn't just Sunday. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, on and on and on until that animal is fat. A consistent walk with the Lord that's true and looking towards Him. The fat is what the Lord wants. And that animal that was fatted, it means more back then than it does today, because it meant the other animals had to go without. And this one had to be separated so it wouldn't get hurt and maimed or blemished and would get fat. It was a significant sacrifice day after day after day, and it was brought to the Lord, the fat. God doesn't need fat to survive. He's not a man as we need food to live. It's a spiritual application found here in the Old Testament. It's the fat, that consistent walk that He delights in, that He wants from us, from them, shown here. And we know it, not because it's the law. This was written hundreds, thousands of years before the law, because it's our conscience that tells us it's the right thing. We don't need the law to tell us that. It's the right thing, a consistent walk with our God and our Creator. It's what He desires. It's the fat. You don't need the law to tell you that. It's the right thing. You need a conscience and a thinking mind. And the firstling. What's the firstling represent? It's what you want the most. The firstborn. It's the most coveted thing. The first fruits of the year-long harvest, that's not harvest, but the year-long crop that's been growing, been cultivating, pulling bugs off, watering, irrigating. You've been eating of the old corn of the land. It's getting stale. You're waiting for that new harvest. You can't wait. The kids are waiting. There's special things they would make with the brand new harvest, parched corn and special treats they would make. But are you going to stop and say, wait a minute, this is the Lord in my life. He has worked. He has done all the work. He has blessed me. am I going to stop before I take any of the firstling or the first fruits and acknowledge God in that? You don't need the law to tell you. Your conscience tells you if there is a God, there is a creator, he deserves the first and the best. So looking at Genesis in chapter 4, when Abel brings of the firstling of the flock and the fat thereof, the Lord has respect unto Abel. It seems to make sense to me. We don't need any law to tell us the right thing. It's in our conscience, and here it is right here. But then there's Cain in the process of time in verse 3. Somewhere along the line, as things are going, halfway through the harvest or halfway through the year, in the process of time, it came to pass, la-di-da kind of, came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit, just the fruit, not the first fruit, just the fruit of the ground, an offering unto the Lord. Where's his heart? There's no indication here of there being a conscience that's pricked, a heart that's moved to bring the best and the choicest and the first. But there was with Abel. There was with Abel. Just a wonderful thing I was seeing in this portion in Genesis chapter 4. Maybe we can look at Leviticus 23:9-11. Now this is the Feast of First Fruits. We recently read this a few weeks back. But this is where the idea of, or one of the ideas of where the first, why the Lord wants the first. 9-11. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye become into the land which I give unto you, and shall reap of the harvest thereof, then ye shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits. There it is, the very first of the harvest, of your harvest unto the priest. Verse 11, and he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you on the morrow. After the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. And he goes on to talk about other things that are brought with the sheaf of first fruits, the offerings of meat offering and so forth. In verse 14, you shall eat neither bread nor parched corn nor green ears until the selfsame day. So the Lord had his portion first before anybody else, that ye have brought an offering unto your God, and it shall be a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings. So here we have an ordinance, the ordinance of the first fruits. But back in Genesis, again, we see it was before the law. I would suggest that that it may be just that in Genesis, a work of the conscience that the Lord would want us to look at. Because it is the same today. Before here in Genesis 4 is before the law, and then today it's, many people would say, after the law. But what still stands, God is the same yesterday, here in Genesis, today and forever. Our conscience bears witness that we understand who God is and the portion he desires of us. Not that we bring physically these portions, but it's a spiritual application. Does God have a place? Does he have a place in our lives? So we just rush headlong into everything that's set before us without any thought of the Lord? Or do we stop and acknowledge him in some way? In some way. You notice that in the sin offering in Leviticus chapter 4. Leviticus chapter 4. I think it's 4. Yeah. Verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a soul shall sin through ignorance against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which ought not to be done, and shall do against any of them, if the priest that is anointed do sin according to the sin of the people, then let him bring for his sin which he hath sinned a young bullock without blemish unto the Lord for a sin offering. And it goes on, and it will eventually tell us that the sin offering here is very much like the peace offering. I don't see it at the moment, but in here it says, like you did with the peace offering, so do with the sin offering. But the difference is, in the sin offering, God gets his portion, as he did in the peace offering. He gets the fat. But what happens in the sin offering is man's portion is forfeited. Man's portion is the flesh, the meat. That's the grace of God. We like the meat. He knows we need it. He gives us the meat. That's our portion. But in the sin offering, we don't get it. It goes and it's burnt outside the camp. When this is sin, sin doesn't go with no repercussions. The Lord died for our sins according to the scriptures. But when we sin, there is loss. There is loss. We don't get a portion. The meat is burnt outside the camp. Man's portion is forfeited in some way, in some measure there. Not so with the peace offering. And all is at peace. We get our portion, the Lord gets his portion, the priest gets his portion. An interesting thing to look at. So there's about 15 minutes left. I think Jens has a couple of things he wants to bring out.